Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. This was a big week in the Sacramento dining scene. The James Beard Awards just wrapped up in Chicago, and a local chef was a finalist for Best California Chef, though he ultimately fell just short of the prestigious title. Billy No is the founder of Crew Contemporary Japanese Cuisine. During his nearly two-decade career in Sacramento, No has grown into a full-fledged restaurateur, with restaurants Kodaiko and Healthy Hounds Kitchen for pet food. But really, regardless of honors like the James Beard, Crew is one of the most popular restaurants in town. Just try to make a reservation on a Friday night. In honor of this recognition, we're revisiting our conversation with Billy No back in February when he was first nominated.
Billy, thank you for joining us and congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I think really in order to appreciate the recognition that you just received and really just what you've accomplished over nearly two decades, you got to go way back to the beginning. You're a local. You have pretty much been in Sacramento your entire life. What brought your family here?
I don't think they chose to, actually. It was because of the Vietnam War. My mom was pregnant with me and she was able to escape and luckily got on a boat to escape. We were one of those boat people back then. There's a lot of those. And she was pregnant with me and we ended up in a refugee camp in Hong Kong, and that's where I was born. And we were there for a few months and then we were allowed to come to Sacramento. Or that's ended up in San Francisco first and then came to Sacramento.
And really planted your roots here
in
Sacramento.
Yes.
Did food and cooking, was it always a big part of your family?
Well, I think growing up in an Asian household, it's always a big part, right? You always have to sit down and eat together for dinner. I really appreciate it now. Growing up, you don't think about it, you know. I was actually like, I would get upset, you know, dinner time. Your parents made you sit down and eat dinner together and you can't leave. You know, you want to go watch cartoons or whatever you're done. But they made you sit together, all eat together before you could leave. And, you know, I didn't appreciate that until later on. And, you know, we grew up very poor. They worked all the time. And for them to still be able to make a meal, it's not just like a one plate meal. Like, I love lasagna, but I'm just saying, for example, like a lasagna, right? It was legit a vegetable. There's a rice, there's a fish, and there's a meat dish. It was like all these dishes. You sit down, you ate together. And thinking about it now, like, how did they even have time to do that? You know?
Yeah. And it's probably because of how much they valued that time and how important it was and formative.
Yes.
For you.
Yeah. So food was always like, important growing up. And I think growing up too, my parents always worked in restaurants. I think they even tried opening a restaurant at one point. So I grew up around it a lot. I remember getting picked up from elementary school and sitting at the restaurant or in the office to do homework and stuff like that for a long time. So it's just always been around, but it was not ever something I dreamt of doing. I didn't think about, oh, I want to be a chef one day or open a restaurant. It just happened.
Yeah. When did you start working in restaurants in Sacramento?
First time was just trying to get a job in high school with a work permit. So just wanted to make money and then got a work permit during high school, got a job at Fuji's as a busboy and dishwasher.
And that's off Broadway, right?
Broadway, yeah. The one of the oldest Japanese restaurants been around. They've been closed and they recently reopened. Different ownership, but same name. So started there as a busboy with a work permit in high school.
You know, given that, you know, you just had a work permit, you're a teenager, you're trying to make a buck, you know, I mean, I worked in restaurants too, or, you know, at a store. You don't necessarily think like, oh, this is just going to be like my career and my passion. When did that happen for you? When did you have that spark or that idea?
Yeah, absolutely not. It was just a job, right? Working there, busboy, dishwasher, and then started doing sushi there, actually. But this was a long time ago. Sushi, well, I think Fuji is one of the most popular Japanese restaurants, huge restaurant, small sushi bar. I don't think sushi was really popular yet until probably the 90s because of Mikuni. So started at Fuji's, busboy, dishwasher, worked up to start doing sushi a little bit. I don't think I really, it was just a job. I didn't love it. It was a job. But I think it really changed my mind when I got a job at Mikuni. Very short stint. I think it was only 6 months, but they were starting to blow up at the time. They probably have over close to 10 restaurants now.
They just opened one up recently off Fair Oaks.
All over. I think that time I got a job is in Roseville, and I believe they just had Roseville for a year and starting to plan to open more. And I had a friend working there, so he got me a job there. I went there, and I think that's when it really piqued my interest because I was going to college, Sac City, just taking classes, not knowing what I wanted to do, but just taking classes, just take classes, and still working. And then when I worked there, that's when I kind of changed my mind because it was it was fun. It wasn't super serious. There's no rules. Most restaurants or sushi restaurants at the time, they had all these rules, very quiet, no sauce. You went there. It was fun. Like, my interview with Taro, I didn't even consider it an interview. He told me to come in. I thought it was going to be an interview. He told me to sit at the sushi bar he was working, and he started feeding me and then asked me a few questions. And I said, oh, when do you want to start? And that was the interview. And I just looked around, and everybody looked there having fun. It was like restaurants. You go to restaurants to eat. Servers serve you. You can't see what's going on in the kitchen. You see what... It was like sitting at a bar. You know, bartenders have fun. They talk to you, chat, they pour you a drink. And that's how I took it. I was like, wow, these guys are having fun. They're chatting with you, making food, splashing sauce on the plates, guys with bleach hair and bandanas. So I was like, this is pretty cool. And I think that's when I kind of really piqued my interest. Hey, maybe this is what I want to do. So when I worked there, that's when I really clicked, like, this is what I want to do. So I just bounced around as much as I can to try to learn as much as I can. And never staying at a restaurant too long. And I think that's when the switch clicked.
I mean, and the switch went like really like a full on switch when you opened Crew. I was looking at when you opened Crew. I can't believe it's almost 20 years ago. 2005 is when Crew opened. I mean, that's just what a trajectory. I mean, do you ever reflect back on that time? Because I believe you were like in your 20s at that time.
Yes, I was 23, 24. So,
I mean, do you ever look back on obviously not knowing what you know now, but like embarking on this restaurant with a lot of drive, but also with uncertainty as well?
I had no idea where we would end up here or be open almost 20 years. Back then, 23, 24, I would think 30-year-old was old. Now, or restaurants being open for 10 years is long, but now we're coming up on 20 years. I can't believe that. It's just amazing that where we're at now. I mean, I would just say it was... being young and dumb, you know, just jumping into it. You better learn how to swim or you're going to sink. Just survive, and I'm glad we survived and made it.
Was your family supportive when you're like, hey, I want to open up a restaurant?
I would say yes, but not in the beginning. When I started to work in restaurants and when I dropped out of college work at restaurants, my parents were pissed. You know, they're very pissed. You know, they worked at restaurants and they're like, we did everything we could to come to America, this and that, you could do whatever you want. And then... you want to work in restaurants. Like, we worked in restaurants because we had to, you know, we couldn't speak the language or this and that. But I liked it, you know. And then I think they changed their mind when I actually went to culinary school and not just like just be a line cook forever, but actually going to culinary school, coming back, talking about wanting to open my own restaurant. That's when they're very supportive of that.
I mean, I look back to, you know, 2005 when you opened Crew, and I know I don't need to tell you this, the restaurant scene in Sacramento has changed a great deal since then. Why did you decide to stick around in your hometown in Sacramento as opposed to, I don't know, moving to bigger cities like San Francisco or L.A.?
I wanted to say, so that's a good question, because I know, so talking to some of my sisters, they're very supportive of what I want to do. Like, you know, whatever you want to do, this makes you happy, and you can saw how passionate I was about it. You know, the times were so different, you know. Even there's no camera phones.
I think there was a flip phone.
There's no YouTube or TikTok. And that's why, Instagram. So now it's so cool. Like, you know, I talked to some of the younger generation chefs or people. I was like, you guys have it so easy. You could hear about this restaurant that's doing amazing things halfway around the world. You go to Instagram and you pull up their page and you can automatically see the dishes they're posting. You could go on YouTube and learn any technique nowadays. Back then, you hear about this restaurant that's doing cool stuff. You're like, I gotta go make a reservation, book a plane ticket, book a hotel. You go there to eat, and you have to pull out your little notebook and you draw pictures because you didn't have a camera phone, because it was like flip phones back then, you know, just like how old it is. Yeah, they're supportive of that. And they mentioned if I wanted to do this, why won't I go to like a city like New York or San Francisco or LA and Seattle? Because we have relatives in Toronto, New York, and all over the place. They're like, well, go to a bigger city where you can actually like make more money, you're going to work in a restaurant or this and that. You know, I thought about it, but it was, I don't know, I just had a lot of Sacramento pride for some reason, because I just grew up here. All my friends, you know, growing up here, hated Sacramento. Not, I wouldn't say all, I mean, but, you know, everybody loved Sacramento, but it was very different. Everybody graduated high school, went to, moved out to go to college, did their things, and, you know, even back then, the only thing that was around that time, graduating high school, graduating in 99, cool about Sacramento was the Kings, you know, and during that time, that era with Chris Webber, and, you know, Bibby and Peja, I mean, that's all we had going. But even during the playoffs, everybody would just call this place a Cowtown and this and that. I don't know, I just had a feeling like, you know, something was going to happen. This city was going to be cool, and I wanted to be part of it and just stay and do something cool, you know, and felt like it was probably not easier, but like there's so many things that during that time, like it was just different going around. I would just go constantly just go out and eat and check out different cities, stuff like that, and just felt like there's so many opportunities to do it in Sacramento, you know, and that's why I decided wanted to stay and be part of that change. I knew that change was going to happen. And in the last 15 years, the city's changed drastically with this whole scene, everything.
Yeah. When you opened Crew, was it just an instant hit? Like, why do you think Crew has remained a constant over the years, nearly two decades? Because you can't take for granted that, you know, maintaining popularity and quality is easier said than done.
I don't think it was instant hit. People, memories say it was. I think it was just so different, right? I didn't want to do the same thing as everybody else was doing, and I think that's what made us popular, was being different, just having really passionate people on our team that believed in the idea of being different. You know, food has been done. Nobody's going to reinvent anything. Everything's been done. You can't patent recipes. You can't do anything. But, you know, there's still that respect in the scene or whatever. Just change a couple of things and make that recipe your own. And I think that's one thing that we do is, you know, we don't copy anybody's stuff. Recipes are recipes. You could just literally change a few ingredients and make it your own. So just do that. You know, I feel like that's what makes us different. I mean, I'm not trying to put any shade on anybody, but that's why working at McCooney's, they did something so cool and so good. And you could see so many restaurants that opened after McCooney literally just taking the same menu item and putting it on their menu and don't even change the name. I'm like, at least change the name, you know? Like, stuff like that. It's just like, I feel like we actually did things a little different and...
You created
fun.
An identity.
Yeah. Just something different, not just another sushi restaurant that's serving the same thing that all the other restaurants are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it comes to the James Beard Awards, does that mean something special to you, getting this recognition, being a semifinalist? Was this something that you strived for? Or is it a bonus?
I'll say it's a bonus. Honestly, the James Beard Award is awesome. I've never strived for it, thought we could even be close. I didn't even know how you could get there because it's different. It's, I don't know, you have to be nominated. And it goes through all these things. I just never paid attention to it because I just thought it was like unattainable. And especially the last few years, I think super excited about Michelin coming to Sacramento. That was such a huge, huge thing for Sacramento. And you know, with the kitchen getting it and then Localis getting it next. Such big, big things for Sacramento. And that was really, really awesome. You know, we've been pushing, you know, to get the Michelin guide to Sacramento for a long time. So when it happened, that was really, really awesome. Besides the stars, you know, those two restaurants definitely deserve it. You know, the kitchen definitely deserves it. They've been doing what they've been doing and killing it for like 30 years. So they definitely deserve it. But having all the other things... The plates, the bibs, the mentions was all awesome. And when that came out, I think I was a little bummed out when we didn't get a mention or a plate because there's plates, bibs, and the stars. We definitely don't deserve a star. We don't fit in the criteria for the Michelin Guide for stars.
Why is that?
I think it's just different. We're just too big of a restaurant.
Right, because if people haven't been to the kitchen or Localis, I mean, it's plated. There are many courses. Oh, yeah. You can do wine pairings. Yep. And yeah, like there are less tables.
Yes. Yes, I think it's that style. But, you know, but that's why there's the bibs and then the plates and then the mentions. And I think I was just super bummed out that, you know, we've been here for almost two decades and doing this. And I was like, you know, we didn't even get a mention or a plate. So after that, I was just kind of bummed, very bummed out. So I just said, forget it. You know, like, we're doing great. Team is happy. Our restaurant's busy. Our vendors are paid. There's nothing else I can ask for. Just keep pushing. And nothing else to ask for. So I think that's why I wasn't looking forward to this or thinking it was going to happen. When it got announced, I was truly, truly shocked. Like, I was in bed, I was sleeping, and then my phone's just blowing up with the text, and then I looked and it was like, congratulations. It was like, it started at 7:30 a.m. It's like, congratulations. I just ignored the first one. So I'll check later on when I wake up. And then there's another one. I just like, what's going on? So I just question marked it. What are you guys talking about? And then somebody just sent me the list, and then I was like, yeah, in shock. I wasn't expecting it at all.
I think that's a pretty good way to wake up.
Yeah.
That's a pretty awesome.
Definitely.
And I would imagine, just as you take a lot of pride in seeing your colleagues in Sacramento get recognized, you know, by Michelin, I know that the restaurant scene here can be tight-knit. Yeah. I would imagine you received, you know, a lot of support following, you know, this announcement.
It was very awesome. Like, it was like a, it melted my heart seeing all the texts, and then later on that day, like all the posts and everybody was tagging and resharing things. Like I was like, oh my god, it was just very heartwarming, melted my heart. And I was like, oh my god, like all the support.
And when you look at the list of who are semifinalists for Best Chef in California, I mean, they're pretty much all based in San Francisco or LA. You are an exception, and the other two are San Diego and Calistoga. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that this Sacramento has been gaining in recognition. I don't even say just the city, but even beyond surrounding counties. Does it ever get frustrating that the focus on the best is often reserved to like the usual big cities?
It's frustrating, but it's starting to feel like it's kind of the norm. You know, because there's still other little areas missing too, right? And it's a hard job for the committee, the reviewers, whoever's going out to find. There's a lot of places that's hard, and I just feel like those areas probably get more because it's more concentrated areas of good restaurants, so it's a little bit easier. So because this is a hard job to go through the whole California. It's no easy feat.
Yeah, so, we're huge.
You know, it's huge. So it's frustrating, but also it's a hard job to try to include everybody.
So I would imagine if someone obviously hears this and maybe hasn't been to Crew yet, if someone is trying out your restaurant, Crew, for the first time, eating by themselves, so no sharing, they have to go alone, what do you recommend they order?
That's a really hard question because we have something for everyone.
You do.
You know, if you're a hardcore sushi eater, we have some of the best fish, best nigiri. It's even funny because if you don't eat fish, we have a burger.
And I was just going to say the burger is really good.
Thank you so much. We get so many jokes or people that come for the first time that, you know, I've heard it and seen it firsthand where somebody sits in front of me and it's their first time they heard about it. And they look at the menu and they see the menu and then they scoff and they laugh. They're like, oh my God, I heard this is supposed to be a good restaurant. And they're talking amongst themselves. And then, I mean, obviously I can overhear it. They have a burger on the menu and this is supposed to be a good sushi restaurant. No, just try it. It's good. There's a story to it. I didn't open the restaurant. I said, let's put a burger on the menu. You know, it's the burger was something that ended up on the menu because we were doing this late night happy hour thing for industry. We called it No Reservations for my last name.
I love it.
But during that time, too, it was, you know, mentioned to Anthony Bourdain, you know, it was like a little bit after he passed. And we're calling it No Reservations. And it was like an industry happy hour. So the restaurant closed at 10, but we did this happy hour where everybody's getting off work, they have nowhere else to go to eat in this. So we're doing this late night happy hour, drink specials. We did a ramen special. We did a burger. So we put the burger on there. And then we did that for a little while, but it was really successful. But it was just taking a toll on our staff after getting beat up on a long service and then having two more hours and stuff. So, you know, we just couldn't do that anymore. So we stopped, and then we were actually getting emails about the burger, people asking for the burger. So that's when we put it on the menu, because otherwise, you know, we wouldn't put a burger on the menu at a sushi restaurant. That's how it ended up there. But, you know, it's been doing great.
And it is something for everyone. Yeah. I mean, I love raw fish, you know, sashimi, nigiri, like that's usually what I order. But it is nice if I'm going with someone, like I think of my dad, like, you know, he's not really a fan of raw fish, but like he'd be totally down with that burger.
Yes.
And so you can have more people dine with you. You've also been a chef, I think, at like Pebble Beach Food and Wine, Los Angeles Food and Wine. Mm-hmm. You've also made television appearances as well. Do you enjoy that kind of limelight? Is it fun?
I like doing the Pebble Beach Food Wine. We're going again this year. Like, they haven't done that since 2009 because of the pandemic and all. That's just really fun. I love doing the Pebble Beach Food Wine, LA Food Wine, because it gets you out of your restaurant and you get to work with these chefs that you never get to work with normally because, you know, there's chefs from around the world that comes to mingle with them, to participate in an event with them, and then bringing some of my staff with me to work and see this stuff, because some of these things, you know, they probably never could go on their own, you know. It's a crazy event, you know, the tickets are very pricey, so it's really cool to bring team and be part of it. So yeah, I love that stuff. TV shows, I don't think so.
No.
That stuff, it takes a lot. It's a lot of stress. So those TV shows, that
because you're probably competing,
yes,
right?
You know, you watch it, you know, it's a quick, you know, 20-minute episode. That's a lot of TV magic. You're there for 8-12 hours, and you know, it's the most adrenaline, anxiety, and stress combined all at once I've ever felt. So I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, I feel like there's enough of that within
a restaurant, especially
being a restaurant owner,
exactly,
and having to focus on the business aspect in addition to the creativity that goes on in the kitchen. The Crew is not also isn't your only eatery. You know, you have Kadaiko Ramen and Bar, which is near Doko off K Street, Fish Face Poke Bar, which is off R Street, right? And then Crew is also at Sky River Casino in Elk Grove. And then, of course, I can't forget the pet food store, Healthy Hounds Kitchen. That's a lot to accomplish in less than two decades. I mean, I don't know. Was this always your goal, or when did you start thinking bigger in this way?
I think right away, after the first 2 years, we were already looking to move Crew and then looking to do other concepts. Because I really enjoy now, is just, or even back then, building teams and concepts. And also, it's hard enough to do one restaurant. And like I said earlier, very fortunate to have really good partners and team. There's no way I could do this on my own. All these other restaurants, I'm not there working the line at all. I'm like, no, it's the team and the partners that help us going. And I just really loving building concepts and teams. But, you know, it's still a lot of work. We have one more project coming up, but I think I'll be done after that.
What is the new restaurant coming up?
It's going to be, we're calling it a contemporary Asian concept, contemporary Asian cuisine. But I think the basis of flavors will be Vietnamese and Chinese, the two flavors I grew up eating.
So your family inspired?
Yes. Naming it after my mom. Her maiden name was Mai Chu. So we're flipping it, calling it Chu Mai, because when you say Chinese names in Chinese, you always say last name first. So we're calling it Chu Mai. And it's going to be a Chinese Vietnamese restaurant, flavors, but not doing like exactly Chinese Vietnamese food. I already had some Vietnamese friends tell me, like, you know, Chu means uncle, right? So, you know, this restaurant sounds weird. Why are you calling Uncle Mai? I said, no, it's not Uncle Mai. It's my mom's name. Her last name is Chu. So, yeah, she passed away in 2020. So, you know, naming it after her, just, you know, it's a way to keep her name alive for me and the family.
Yeah, I would imagine. That would have brought a huge smile to her face after two decades of having a restaurant in her name. Going back to the beginning for you, if you come across someone who is your age, a 20-something, who wants to open their own restaurant, what advice would you give them? Or what advice do you wish you would have had?
I would say before going to culinary school or dropping out of college or whatever, go and just work and stage in a few restaurants. Don't just stick with one. Every restaurant's going to be different. Every recipe's different. Go and try to stay no longer at a restaurant than a year or less. I mean, just get your feet wet. See if you actually enjoy it. And don't, you know, this field is different. You can't go to school and read a book and read a recipe and do a recipe two times. You need to do it over and over to perfect that knife cut, that sauce, whatever it is. You need to do it. And also, you need to work those 12-hour shifts, 15-hour shifts, and realize, is this what you want to do? And, you know, there's some of us, we're all crazy. All chefs, all restaurateurs, we're all a little crazy that enjoy that. So you actually enjoy it, that's when you should push and keep doing. But go actually throw yourself in it first, you know, immerse yourself in it. Keep bouncing around because every place is different. Try to learn as much as you can. And then after a few spots and you realize that's what you want to do, then go for it. Or you might realize, no, maybe not a chef, but I love this industry. Maybe I could be in management, or versus on the other side, being a rep or brand ambassador for, you know, selling produce or the meat side or whatever. It could still be something in the industry, but maybe you don't want to be in that hot kitchen, the hotline, 12 hours a day or whatever it is, you know.
Just
figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is our last question. It is the hardest question. Mm-hmm. When you are off work, what do you eat? Do you cook?
That's not hard at all. That's easy. Very easy. No, when I'm off work, I don't want to cook anything. So my freezer is full of frozen food from Costco. There's Hot Pockets. There's full of instant pho and ramen in the cupboards.
That's a healthy balance.
I love fast food like Jim Boy's. I love fast food. I don't cook when I get off. Like, we go out and eat or just eat junk food, I mean, which is not healthy, but we go out and eat a lot. I think the most cooking I did was during the pandemic and the shelter in place when, you know, we weren't really working, serving as much, just doing to-go food. But during that time, you know, not working, that's when I did the most cooking during that time.
I actually think that's healthy because I can only imagine how much time you spend in a restaurant or in the concept period. It's actually nice to kind of like turn those lights off and to actually, that opens up time for you to spend with your family and loved ones.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, Billy, thank you so much.
Thank
it was
you.
A pleasure.
Thank you, Vicky, for having me.
Billy Ngo is the founder of Crew Contemporary Japanese Cuisine, along with other establishments in Sacramento, and was a finalist for Best California Chef for the James Beard Awards. We spoke with him back in February when he was first nominated. The winner was just announced in Chicago yesterday, with the title going to Lord Maynard Lira of Kuya Lord in Los Angeles. That's Insight for today. Learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the conversation, email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Sarit Lashinsky and Jen Picard. Our digital producer is Chris Feltz. Insight's technical director and audio engineer is Mark Jones. Our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Chris Nichols, in for Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We're going to be off for a couple days, but we'll catch you back here on Monday.